I'm David Meltzer, and I'm blessed to be here with an amazing entrepreneur, an amazing coach, but even a more amazing person. We're here at the Masters. It's an intimate group that we have a mastermind before we get something that's truly inspirational and experiential because of the frequency. It doesn't matter the golf. It is its own ecosphere, and I love watching people. It's like the people from Michigan, for some reason, they don't leave Michigan and you get to take them to Manhattan for the first time. And it's the energy of Manhattan. Yeah. Right? It's the frequency. The Masters has a different frequency. And it's not just the community around here during the Masters, but once you enter that gate, everything changes. It's like scuba diving. All of your senses change. And what I try to do is bring the right people with the right ideas to that frequency, to elevate and escalate the awareness of that frequency. Chad Sandgren is that type of person. He speaks around the world, coaches people. We always want to pull a seat up next to us, and hopefully people like Tim Story pull a seat up next to him and other people in my career. And it's such a joy to see people own that seat. Mm. And first, I just wanted to thank you for owning the seat. And your progress has just excited me that we're on the right mission together.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it's God that put me in the seat first and foremost. So the seat's only possible through all things through God. And so it's interesting. I think a lot of times you get invited into a room, but you don't think you belong in the room. And it took forever for me to realize that I need to walk in the room like God sent me, because he did. So if he approved me walking in the room, then I need to walk in with confidence. So I appreciate the opportunity.
And with that confidence comes the comfortability, and faith is incorporated in that. Mm. A lot of times, I remember one of my mentors, even when I was successful, he said to me, David, you have to learn to love you. Mm. And I thought that was an arrogant thing. I'm like, that's not the way I was raised. I love everyone else. I love myself. And I started questioning it, and I realized I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't love myself. I was, God, if I treated other people the way I treated myself, I'd have no friends. Nobody would love me. If I treated people the way that I treated myself, when did you have an epiphany that you weren't loving yourself and you were worthy of everything God had given you?
Oh my gosh. I think there's a lot of shift moments. Shift standing for see how I find truth. See how I find truth moments. And you find truth in, it's easier to find truth in the victimhood. It's easier to say, well, I just was born broken. I was born not enough. I was raised by a single mother. I have no relationship with my father. There's no picture that exists of me and my father. And so that was my crutch to say, well, you know, it doesn't matter what happens because I'm not worthy. I don't have all these things. I wasn't born on the right side of the tracks with a silver spoon in my mouth. I never read a book, because victims don't read books. I was 25 years old. I was illiterate by choice. You know, it's one thing to be illiterate without choice. It's another thing to be literate by choice. And so that's all the signs of a victim. I met my wife in a bar. I was drinking. I had a really bad drinking problem. I had been evicted from a $400 apartment because I spent all my money on drinking. And I met my wife, and we went on a date. And it was the worst date I'd ever gone to in my life. This woman was going to school to be a doctor and a lawyer, two different universities at the same exact time. Didn't drink, didn't party, just happened to be at a party for her friend that night in that bar.
And luckily she had bad vision.
Luckily she had really bad vision. It was dark in the room. And so we went on a date. It was horrible. I said I would call her. I never called her. 4 months later, 3 months later, I'm in the same bar. I see her again. She just happens to be there again. But you know, there's no coincidence. It's only God. And I walked up to her. I didn't even remember her. And she said the highlight of her summer, she went out on a date with this guy and he never called. And I, by the grace of God, I said, hey, let me make up for that, jackass, and buy you a drink. And she let me buy a drink. And that night I realized that I was playing small. I was playing not worthy, and that either I was going to continue on this path of believing that the reason why the date was so bad is because she was out of my league. I wasn't worthy of that. And I made a declaration on that day, August 21st at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, that I was gonna change my life. I was gonna spend the rest of my life with this woman, not for her to heal me, but for me to work to the point where I could be in her presence and be worthy. And 25 years later, here we are.
It's amazing how many people have similar stories with different facts. And you said something interesting. There are no coincidences, but I believe that there is coinciding. Mm. And when I say coinciding, that means that you have paid attention to in your shift.
Yeah.
And given intention to. So a lot of people come to these epiphanies in several different times in their life. They see the coinciding of God and their attention.
Yeah.
But they fail to give it the intention. Mm. So they go back into the same pattern.
Yeah.
And this is in different levels that is happening. It happens in your business. And with your idea of shift, which I really appreciate, because I think that's how we improve ourselves and we get to the promotion and perfection that God wants for us by protecting us as well, is that we often pay attention to the coincidence, but we fail to give it intention. That's we right. fail to make a plan to do something different, say something different, think something different, feel something different, and believe something different. In fact, I'm an empath. And when I still feel this, but when you said, I don't have a picture of me and my father, mm-hmm. it hits me. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm feeling you, right? You and I know that still hits you, but you've decided to think, say, do, believe, and feel something different about the fact there's not a picture even of you and your dad. Mm-hmm. This is biochemically, this is genetically and energetically inherited, this feeling.
Yeah.
What advice do you give people? Because you obviously have done great work to do, say, think, feel, and believe what you coincide with.
Yeah. I think the first thing is you gotta forgive the version of yourself and the things you did when you were in survival mode. I think, you know, you walk down my hallway in my office, and there's a picture of me as a kid, and it's the only picture that exists of me actually manifesting how I actually felt inside. I was in a Little League uniform. The rest of the kids are smiling. They got their hats on. It's like the best day of their life. I have no hat on. I'm miserable. My face is drawn down. I'm actually a broken human being. I was 12 years old. And that's hanged in my office. And underneath of it says who I was. And then you walk a couple of steps further, and there's me crossing the finish line of one of my 55 marathons. And I'm smiling, and I'm feeling, I have the glow of pride, the glow of like I'm stepping into what I was meant to be. And underneath of it says, who I am. And then you walk a couple of feet further, and there's a picture of my shadow. And it's a picture of me in an early morning run where my shadow was just right. And I stopped and took a picture of it during this run. And underneath it says, is who I'm becoming. And for me, my life forever changed the minute I decided to love all versions of them. No picture exists of me and my father, but I can pull out my phone and there's about no less than 80,000 at last count pictures of me and my daughters. I would not be the father I am today had I had the father I should have had when I was a kid. It doesn't mend it, but it gives it purpose of maybe God put me through that storm because my kids need to be the father that I am today. The fact that I never read a book, I now have a national best-selling book. I don't say that to impress you. I say that to impress upon you. I never got a better than a D in an English class. I never read a book until I was 25. I can't read enough books now. And maybe that's what God needed me to go through to get this. So I think the healing begins when you decide, and Tim said it, this really hit me. And I wrote this down and I underlined and I highlighted and I bolded it as he said it on my phone. And that was, if you spend all your life in the recovery zone, you miss the discovery. And for me, it was the perfect way he said that allowed me to realize I'm no longer in the recovery zone. I'm in the discovery zone. And I think there's still times when you want to go back to that recovery zone because the critic gets loud. He said another thing. He said to the fact that it was similar to what Denzel Washington said, it's your very highest level when the devil's coming for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Will Smith.
And so at the end of the day, for me, when I see, you know, I do all these speaking gigs, I have this huge company, I have all this success, and it seems like the critic now is louder than when I was in the victim zone,
that inner
demon. And for me, I got to make sure that I don't go to the recovery zone and stay in that and cement myself. When I realize it, I got to shift, find truth in different stories, different narratives, and move out. But I think for me, the biggest thing is to learn to forgive yourself of what you did when you were in survival mode and get into the idea that you're no longer in that season of your life. I don't have to survive anymore. I'm in thrive mode. And so to me, that was a big shift.
It's a huge shift. And to that end, we were talking about time, which is my love language. Mm-hmm. And I love the statement that things happen so slowly, then all of a sudden. That to me depicts exactly what the challenge is. And one of the capabilities that you and I share from working with you so much now and having such a great friendship, and I learned more from one dinner with you and your wife, with me and my wife, than I did in all the other interviews and conversations and friendship that we've had.
Yeah.
And the reason is I learned that you have a capability to love what you don't like or love naturally, or what other people don't love or like.
Mm.
And Bob Parsons from GoDaddy told me if I could do that every day without quitting, that it's not loving what you do, you won't work a day in your life. It's those who learn to love what they do will never work a day in their life.
Mm.
And they'll never have any challenges. This is a lesson I've learned recently. I tell my kids until they roll their eyes at me every day that I love you, I'm proud of you, and I always have your back.
Mm.
I get choked up saying it because my dad never told me it. Not once.
Mm. Yeah.
I tell them every day, but what I learned when people roll their eyes at me, that means I'm planting a seed. That means they heard me and they're taking what I said, even though they're rolling their eyes at me, they're rejecting me, they're resisting me, they're planting the seed.
Yep.
Again and again. So I look for people to roll their eyes at me now because I know what they physically are doing, rolling their eyes at me, some sort of resistance to what I'm saying, I'm winning because I'm planting the seed.
Yeah.
And somebody else will water that seed because I'm not the right person to water it because I'm their dad or I'm their boss or I'm their friend. As long as I can get them to plant that seed, keep rolling your eyes at me.
Yeah, that's right.
It came from thinking for the sake of what. You said, once I realized for the sake of what, did I go through this?
Yeah, that's right.
It changes your perspective. How are you able to, in the moment, when shit happens with all that stuff going on, remind yourself, no recovery, I'm in discovery. For the sake of what am I going to discover?
Yeah, I think this is, yeah. You know, I do, I talk about how I run a lot, right? And I run 8 to 10 miles a day, every day. I I'm big into it. And for me, it's moving.
You are very big.
for me,
not it's, just the camera.
for me, it's moving.
I'm not that small.
It's a moving meditation for me. It's the one time I have in a day that nobody needs me. Nobody wants me. I do it at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's just me. And I used to be when I first started running, I would only run if the conditions were perfect. If there was no wind, there was no hills, there was no rain, it was like, all right, it's perfect. But if any slight of circumstance that might disrupt the run, I'd be like, you know what, it's a little bit too hard, right? I'll do it tomorrow. And I realized that I don't get to control the circumstances. I get to control my behaviors, my actions. And so for me, I now flipped that and I was like, no, if it rains, I'm definitely going to run. If it's windy, I'm definitely going to run. Today I ran 10 miles. I ran opposite. I ran into the wind. I ran up the hills because I want to do things. This isn't a David Goggins type thing.
Right.
This is I can't control the circumstances. And if I can learn to love when the circumstances are hard, if I can pray for winter when everybody's afraid of winter, then it's not about me getting better than anybody else. I'm not competing with anybody else. My competition was with the version I was yesterday.
Yeah.
Jesus believed that your life was to be devoted to self-transformation. And so you can only transform in the storms. And so if you want to transform, then why not pray for the storms? Why not look at the storms and be like, all right, if I get better in the storms, then there's nothing that can stop me from transforming. And so for me, I think a lot of people wish for easy instead of try to get better. I don't want easy. I want to get better so that things become easy. And when they become easy, I'm going to make them harder again. Because at the end of my life, I'm going to stand before God and I'm going to have to say, you know what? I've transformed to version 10.0 in every version of my life. And people spend more time trying to figure out how to upgrade their electronics than they do how to upgrade themselves. And I am not going to be an obsolete BlackBerry. I'm going to be an iPhone 40. I'm going to be an iPhone 50. And, you know, a better father, a better husband, a better Christian, a better speaker, a better owner. Not better than anybody else. Ego stands for edging God out. It's not about God. It's about me. This is about true love that I'm only competing with me.
Yeah, it's interesting in the distinction of praying for the storm. I had a difficult time believing that because I teach people, pray for what you want, not for what you don't want.
Mm.
But when I made the distinction like you did, that I want the storm for the sake of growth, for the stake of strength, right? I want to do push-ups every day, not because they're easy, not because I want to do them every morning, but because I want, for the sake of the strength that I'm going to have, physical strength to live longer, more healthy, to have more energy, to perform on that energy, I'm going to do what it takes. And I'm not praying for what I don't want, though. And so I want people to realize, when people say pray for the storm, that's what they want, because for the sake of the storm, they know protection, promotion, love, and perfection comes not for the easy breezy days. The easy breezy days aren't going to strengthen you. They're going to make you comfortable. And that's not what the universe or the human biome is about. The biome is expansive in its nature, and so is the universe, because God in the infinite is more than enough of everything. And you need to expand into that everything, or else you're going to play this little role in your life.
And it's not about perfection. It's not about you living this like perfect life and not allowing. The devil's coming for you.
Yeah.
And it's going to knock you down sometimes. And Nelson Mandela, who's one of the most
profound.
He said, I'm no saint unless a saint is a sinner who's trying to do better. And for me, I'm a sinner who's trying to do better. And I'm trying to forgive the version of myself that didn't live up to God's image. And once you do that, I think you feel this extra sense of, it's not motivation. You talked about it earlier. It's like the energy. You know, we're friends. We have mutual friends in Gary and Gary B, right?
Yeah.
And what's amazing is you can be down on the levels in the streets of New York City. And every time I'm in New York City, I'll go see him. And I know you do. And I'll be, you know, and you go up, his office is on like the 60th floor in Hudson Tower. And the energy in New York is incredible. But when you get off on that elevator, it's a different type of energy. And when you have this energy of transformation and growth, and you actually love yourself and believe in yourself and forgive yourself, it's a different type of motivation. It's a different type of motivation. My wife, who is, you know, she's a doctor, a lawyer, she's a mother, she's a business owner, she's the most incredible woman in the world, but she suffers from the I am not enough syndrome. And she put on a ton of weight after we had our twins, started to really let herself go and fall out of love with herself. In the last year, she's lost 120 pounds. And the greatest thing about her learning to love herself again was she said, Chad, I'm so happy. I've never been happy. She said this to me a couple weeks ago. I've never been happier. I said, it's not happiness. It's pride. You actually love what you see in the mirror now. And that can't be imposed. I can be proud of you, but I can't instill pride in you. That only comes from the inside. And I think when you look in the mirror and you absolutely love what you see, you'll have that pride glow. And it's a different type of energy. When I look in the mirror today, I see somebody that I'm proud of. I see somebody that's proud to take a picture next to my daughters or with my daughters or contribute on stage. And I think that for me, that's the biggest thing in life, is learning to love what you see in the mirror and having that pride glow. And when you have it, you will liberate others around you to have it. And that's how you change the world.
Inside, you can't find outside of you what you can't find inside of you. Last question. There's an idea of perception. And one of the things within the context of forgiveness, if you study forgiveness is here to give you ease. Ease brings inspiration. Ease brings the infinite to you. The more at ease you are, the more accessible the infinite is. And we as human beings not only need to access the infinite, but we have to learn how to regulate the infinite. And so this took me a while to understand that I regulate energy and information at the highest level. So it's not just a matter. Some people can actually receive information, especially today at an infinite level, but your human being can't handle it. Same thing with energy. If you ever gone to a big workshop and you come home and get sick, Tony Robbins is famous for this. People go to the platinum and they'll come home and they're just beat up. Yeah, because you're not regulating the energy. Now, most people, it's not even a matter of regulating. It's interfering with the infinite.
Yeah.
So your regulation is too much. You're stopping it. And it's usually your reaction to fear that causes you to stop the abundance. You don't think you can lose the weight or you have the money or whatever. To finish up, one of the things that I've noticed about you that's similar to me or what I aspire to be, which I'm always aspiring to become something, is you're very good at regulating information and energy, right? Yeah. We do resist it, but you regulate it to your human frequency, which creates ease, which creates a better flow, which creates the coincidences, the coinciding of the universe. Have you cognitively or thought about some of the things that you do to regulate information and energy?
Yeah, listen, this to me is the number one thing. And what's interesting is if you went home right now and you drove in home and there was a whole bunch of people partying in your backyard, if you didn't know him, you would call the cops and people would say, you're on my land, you're on my boundary. And we put up these fences all around and you would get really upset if somebody was trespassing, because they're on your yard, and people protect their physical boundary lines more than they protect their personal boundary lines. And so for me, I'm all about, you are not allowed to come in my yard if you are toxic. And Tim talked about it. There is not a toxic person around me. And I can tell you that because two reasons. One, I can't have that in my life. It'd be like an alcoholic going to hang out at a bar. It's not good. I can go right back to where I came from. So I have to regulate. I think the number one thing to regulate is keep toxicity away from you. It cannot be, at least for me, it cannot be anywhere in my presence. The second thing is making sure that you're focused on the three things, right? You focus on your mind, focus on your body, and for me, it's focus on my faith. When I get further away from God, my energy depletes. When I get further away from my physical body being good, my energy depletes. And when I get away from my mission, my energy depletes. And I think the idea is keep those three things centered. Keep God centered, keep your mission centered, keep your body centered. And I think all those things come to fruition, give you the energy you need.
There is no balance in between those three things. It's harmony that exists. And too many people seek some sort of weighted quantitative balance, and it's unrealistic.
Yeah.
The universe is one, therefore we look for harmony in the toxicity, in the interference, in the reactions to fear that creates disharmony, which seems to regulate us to say, well, I need to be balanced.
Yeah.
No. You need to be harmonious
so
and know where you are. And that's I just want to thank one of the most harmonious large creatures I've ever met on Earth. He is a ferocious Buddha at its core, a dear friend of mine, incredible Chad Sandergan. This is David Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.